with chapter 44 of Genesis. And just depending on how well I do, we may get through. We'll just see. But we're with Joseph's brothers coming to Egypt for the second time. And they have Benjamin with them. And they've eaten the noon meal with Joseph. And then afterwards, Joseph tells the steward of his house, he says, fill the men's sacks with food, all they can carry, put their money back into the mouth of the sack. And he said, put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest. In other words, in Benjamin's sack, and along with his money. And the steward obviously has done what Joseph has asked. And when the morning dawned, the men were sent away. And when they'd gone out of the city and they hadn't gotten very far, Joseph sent his steward. He said, now go follow the men. And when you overtake them, ask them why they've repaid me evil for when I did them good, why have they repaid me with evil? And he said, is not this the one which my Lord drinks with? He's talking about the cup now. He says he practices divination. He said, now whoever took this, you've done evil in doing it. So this steward, he follows these men, he overtakes them, and he tells them what Joseph has said, and they say, look, far be it from us to do anything. Here again, we're honest men, right? I mean, they haven't stolen anything. And they said, look, we brought back to you the money that was restored the last time. How could we even think of stealing silver and gold from your Lord's house? It says, this right here is a good word of advice. Don't let your mouth get you into trouble, and that's exactly what happens with them. They speak before they know the facts. They said, with whomever of your servants it's found, let him die, and we will be my Lord's slaves. You better know what you're talking about when you say something like that, huh? And he said, all right, let it be according to your words. But he with whom it is found will be my slave. And he said, the rest of you will be blameless. So each man took his bag down and opened the sack. And the steward began to search from the oldest. And he stopped with the youngest. And the cup was in Benjamin's sack. It says they tore their clothes. I'm telling you, all these boys felt the weight of this one, didn't they? And each man loaded his donkey and they returned to the city. They weren't about to send Benjamin back alone. So it says, Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house and he was still there. What happens? They fell before him on the ground. Isn't it interesting how many times they're bowing down before him? Not just one, huh? And Joseph said, what have you done? He said, didn't you know that a man like I am can practice divination? You think you can get by with something from me? And Judas said, what can we say? How do we clear ourselves? God's found out the iniquity of your servants. So here we are, your slaves. We and the one with whom the cup was found. They weren't about to go home to Jacob, you understand, without Benjamin. But he said, far be it from me that I should do so. But the man that the cup was with, that's the only one I want. He'll be my slave. You go to your father in peace. And Judah came near to him. Now, during the break, we found out that Judah is the one that was responsible or initiating the selling of Joseph into slavery. Judah says, far be it from me that I should do so, is what Joseph said. Judah came near to him and said, please let me speak a word. And don't be mad at me. Don't be angry with me. He said, for I know you're even like Pharaoh. And he said, you know, you asked, did we have a father or a brother? And we told you that our father was an old man. And that this was the child of his old age. And that this boy's brother's dead. And he's the only one left of his mother's children. And says his father loves him. Now, see, these guys recognized that, didn't they? That Jacob probably was showing favoritism toward Benjamin, just like he had toward Joseph. And It says he told us to bring it. He said you told us to bring him down that you could see him, and he said we said the lad couldn't leave his father. If he did, his father would die. But he said you wouldn't let us come back without him. And you know the essence is here we are. You know we brought him with us, and he said you know when our father told us to go come back down, you know we told him we couldn't come back down without Benjamin, and. He said to us, you know, my wife bore me two sons. This is what Jacob told them. He said, one went out from me, and I said, surely he is torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since. Now, see, this is educating Joseph. He's getting bits and pieces of what's been surmised about his whereabouts and welfare and all this. But Jacob says, if you take this one also from him and calamity befalls him, you shall bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave. In other words, I'll grieve until I die. And it says, when I come to your servant, my father, and the lad's not with us, since his life is bound up in the lad's, he says it will happen when he sees that the lad's not with us that he'll die. That's something, isn't it? It said, so your servants will bring down the gray hair of our father, you know, with sorrow to the grave. He said, note what Judah says. He said, for your servant, this is Judah speaking, became surety for the lad to my father. In other words, Judah is still sticking by what he told his father. He said, if I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father forever. So he said, now let me stay and let the boy go back home. Now we see some repentance, don't we? He said, how in the world could I face my father without Benjamin with me? And then when you go to chapter 4 to 5, Joseph just couldn't hold it any longer. He just couldn't restrain himself. And so he makes everybody leave the room except these brothers. And then he revealed himself to his brothers, and he wept aloud. Says the Egyptians and Pharaoh's house heard it. Now this must have been some serious weeping. What do you think? That they heard him crying, and Joseph said to his brothers, he said, I am Joseph. Does my father still live? But his brothers could not answer him. Now, I'm going to tell you what, I'm sure their mouths were wide open, right? They were in dismay. Joseph? He said, I'm Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. In other words, he's identifying some things, you know, that they know that he could know otherwise. He said, I want you to look at this. I mean, you're talking about insight and forgiveness and all this. This verse 5, it says, but now do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. Look, guys, don't get upset with yourself. You know, it's a done deal. This was a method that God used to get me here to preserve your lives. Now, isn't that, God does things in some unusual ways. I would never think in my wildest dream that the way to be the governor of the land would be by being lied about, being sold into slavery, being lied about, and cast into prison. That, I just don't see that as the route to the throne, you understand. But that's what God used. That's the method he used to get him there. And Joseph recognized that God's hand was in this situation. Not that God's condoning sin. Don't misunderstand me. Let me tell you something. God can take bad and bring good from it. That's the thing we want to differentiate, okay? Not that God causes the bad, but he can take the bad and bring good from that. So he says, for these 2 years, the famine's been in the land. Now we know we have a little insight there that this famine has been going on for 2 years. And it says there's 5 years to come. In other words, the famine is going to last 5 more years. He said, God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in earth and to save your lives by great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God. Now, I promise you, that's insight. When you can see that. And I'm sure these guys are still standing there wide-mouthed, you understand. And he said, and he has made me a father the Pharaoh and lord of all his house. Now, that's interesting coming from a 32-year-old. How do I know he's 32? Well, actually, no, he's older than that because of the 7 years of famine, 14 years. He's 44. What is he, 46, right? So he's 46 years old. Remember, he was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh. 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine, right? And then this is 2 years. Oh, I'm sorry. Right. Thank you. I wasn't an A student in high school, you understand? Right. I was stretching this thing out. So we've actually had 9 years, so he was 39. Thank you. I told you I wasn't perfect. That's why I would need you to help me. Now, he tells him, he says, I'm the Lord of his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go get my father. And tell him that his son Joseph is alive and in Egypt and not to tarry, but to get down here immediately. And he said, you'll dwell in the land of Goshen and you shall be near me. He said, I want you to bring everything you have. I want the whole family to move down here. Something, isn't it? And he said, I'll provide for you. And you'll be taken care of during this famine. He said, there's still 5 more years to come. And he said, behold, your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it's my mouth that speaks to you. He said, so, you know, tell my father of all my glory in Egypt, all his honor, and all you've seen, and hurry and bring him down. And it says, moreover, he kissed all his brothers and wept over them, and after that his brothers talked with him. Afterwards, his brothers talked with him. And so, let's get that where it comes out right. So, Pharaoh's house hears about all this and about Joseph's brothers coming, and it pleases Pharaoh and his servants. So, he says, just tell your brothers, do this. Load your animals, depart, go to the land of Cana, bring your father, your households, and come to me. He said, I'll give you the best of the land of Egypt. You'll eat the fat of the land, and take carts out of Egypt for your little ones and your wives. Bring your father and come. He says, don't be concerned about your goods. Don't worry about bringing all your stuff with you. He said, the good of the land of Egypt's before you. I'll just give you whatever you need. And says, so the sons of Israel did so. And Joseph gave them the carts and the provisions and all that. And it says he gave to each man changes of garments, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. Now look at this. And he sent them to his father, 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt, 10 female donkeys loaded with grain, bread, and food for his father for the journey. Now I want you to listen to what he tells in verse 24. He said, so he sent his brothers away and they departed. And he said to them, see that you do not become troubled along the way. Then they went up out of Egypt and came to the land of Cana to Jacob their father. Now, just to help me here if I've missed this, but I think he may be saying to them, now don't be arguing over whose fault it was. Forget it. Just go on and just remember God's done this, and you go on and bring the family back down here to me. And so when they arrived home, they told Jacob, they said, Joseph is still alive, and he's governor over all the land of Egypt. It says Jacob's heart stood still. I could imagine. He didn't believe them. So they told him what Joseph had said, and he said when he saw the carts that Joseph had sent to him, said the spirit of Jacob, their father, revived. In other words, life came into him. He said, all right, it's enough. Jacob, my son's alive. I'm going to see him before I die. How about that? So then when you get into chapter 46, this is where Jacob, or Israel, journeys down into to Egypt, but on the way there, he comes to Beersheba. It says he offers sacrifices to God. Now, I'm going to tell you, he has something to offer sacrifices about, doesn't he? Verse 2 says, God spoke to him in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. Now, that interests me that God called him Jacob. Yeah. And he said, here I am. So he said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. Isn't that what he told Abraham? He said, I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again, and Joseph will put his hands on your eyes. In other words, he'll be there when you die. You know, you close your eyes. You've probably never done that, right? Okay. All right. So it says that he arose from Beersheba, and they take everything they have, and they go down to Cana. I mean, they have their livestock and a whole ball of wax, and so they go down to Egypt with all their descendants. And it goes on and it gives the names of the descendants, and I'm not going to read all these. We'll get down to verse 26. It says, all the persons who went with Jacob to Egypt, who came from his body besides Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 persons in all. And the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were 2 persons. All the persons of the house of Jacob who went to Egypt were 70. In other words, that's including Joseph and his sons. In other words, this nation that started with Abraham, actually started with Isaac, has now grown to 70 in the third generation, hasn't it? With the third generation, I should say. And now this thing's going to continue to grow to become a great and a mighty nation. And Judah goes before them to Joseph and points out the way to the land of Goshen. And so they came to the land of Goshen. Do you remember that from the reading about the plagues of Egypt and all that? And do you remember the land of Goshen? From that, God made a difference after a while to where the land of Goshen wasn't affected by certain plagues. How about that? So this is how they got in that land of Goshen. So when Joseph finds that they arrive, he gets his chariot and he takes off to Goshen to meet his father. And he presented himself to him, fell on his neck and wept. Israel said to Joseph, he said, now let me die since I've seen your face, because you're still alive. And then Joseph told him, he said, look, I'll go talk to Pharaoh and I'll tell him that y'all come down. And he said, here's what I want you to do. When he talks to you, just tell him that you're shepherds, that your occupation's been to feed livestock, and you brought your flocks and your herds and all that you have. And he says, so you be certain and tell him that that's your occupation when he calls for you. So it tells us that every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians. Isn't it interesting that he says, be sure to tell him that. Don't keep any secrets, boys. But make sure that he knows what you are. So in chapter 47, Joseph, he tells Pharaoh that everyone's there. And so he says he took 5 men from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh. And then when Pharaoh asked their occupation, they said they're shepherds, just as Joseph had counseled them, and said that they'd come to the land to dwell, and they needed, you know, pasture for their flocks and all that. And they just request that he allow them to stay in the land of Goshen. So Pharaoh spoke to Joseph and all, and he said, well, the land of Egypt's before you. Do what you want to. Let them dwell in the land of Goshen. This interests me. He said, if there's any competent men among them, make them chief herdsmen over my livestock. But I like that little preface he put on there. I don't want just any old boy in there yet. So Joseph brings Jacob into the presence of Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Interesting, isn't it? The greater blesses the lesser. And yet Jacob's not the king, Pharaoh is. But Jacob's blessed by God. Now, as he communes with Pharaoh, Pharaoh asks him, says, how old are you? And he says, you know, I'm 130 years, and it hadn't all been good. So he blesses him, and he goes out, and then Joseph gets his family situated in the land. It says, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh had commanded. So he provided for all them. And then when you get down here to the latter portion of this chapter, it says, when the money failed in the land of Egypt, in the land of Cana, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, give us bread. Why should we die in your presence? For the money's failed. Now notice they've been buying grain up to this point. Joseph said, all right, I'll tell you what to do. I'll trade you. You give me your livestock and I'll provide you with grain. So they brought their livestock and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for the horses, the flocks, the cattle, herds, donkeys. And then it says that he fed them that year. And when that year had ended, they came to him the next year and said, we're not going to hide it from you. Our money's gone. Our herds have gone. We don't have any livestock. He said, there's nothing left but our bodies and our land. He said, why should we die before your eyes? Buy us and our land for bread, and we are, and our land, we'll be servants to Pharaoh. He said, give us seed that we can live and not die, that the land not be desolate. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Boy, Pharaoh put the right guy in charge, because now all the cattle of Egypt belongs to Pharaoh. And now the land of Egypt belongs to Pharaoh and the people. You understand? Just to stay alive. I mean, they're selling themselves just to stay alive. So Joseph, it says, bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for every man of the Egyptians that sold his field. Isn't that something? Every one of them. That's a severe famine. So the land became Pharaoh's. So now this king owns the entire land of Egypt, with the exception of the priests, as you see in verse 22. It says, only the land of the priests he did not buy, for the priests had rations allotted to them by Pharaoh, and they ate the rations which Pharaoh gave them. Therefore, they did not sell their lands. And I'm going to tell you something. I see something here that is a principle that applies in all types of cults and everything else. You understand, Pharaoh is not following God. God's not his father and all this. But yet, he's looking out for the priests of his gods. And he's actually made them tax exempt, and he is feeding them. Isn't that interesting? Tax exemption didn't start with the United States, you understand. Benefits for ministers didn't start with the United States. They've been, you know, throughout the Word of God, you see where God provided for His ministers. And even Pharaoh is providing. And it interests me that the only one that had any land when all this is said and done was the priest. Something, isn't it? Now, Joseph, after doing all this, he says, look, I bought you and your land this day. I'm in verse 23. He said, here's seed for you. Now sow the land. And when you get the harvest, he said, one-fifth of it will go to Pharaoh. And four-fifths shall be your own. Now that sounds fair, doesn't it? He said, this is seed for your field, for your food, and for your household, food for your little ones. And what did the people have? What was their response? They said, you have saved our lives. Now let us find favor in the sight of the Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants. They didn't get upset with Joseph. They didn't feel like he had taken advantage of them. Now here's something that interests me. That this dream had been revealed about the years of plenty. Do you think the White House is the only one that knew about that? I mean, things like that filter out, don't they? They just leak out. And yet no one had made provision. Interesting, isn't it? I'm going to tell you, when God speaks and tells you things in advance, I think it's in our best interest to take heed to what He's saying and go ahead and prepare. They had the opportunity to prepare, but they didn't. Consequently, they lost everything they had. Everything, didn't they? Well, let's just be sensitive to the Spirit and just take God literally at His Word. Now, Joseph made it a law. Verse 26 says, Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt to this day that Pharaoh should have one-fifth. In other words, that sounds to me like 20% tax. We should make that a law in the United States, don't you? Instead of taxing us every which way we turn. It says in verse 27 that Jacob or Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt in the country of Goshen. And it says that they grew and multiplied exceedingly. It says Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So his total life was 147 years. And when he felt like it was getting time for him to die, He told Joseph, he called him here, he said, "Now I want you to put your hand under my thigh," and in other words, this is an oath. You know, "I want you to make this oath that you won't bury me in Egypt." But he said, "I want you to bury me in this burial place of my father." And Joseph said, "All right, I'll do like you've said." He swore to him. Now note this. Israel bowed himself on the head of the bed. And in verse 28, it says that after all these things, they told Joseph that Jacob was sick. So he took his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, Manasseh being the oldest. And Jacob, when Joseph arrived, they told him, "Joseph is here." And it says, Israel strengthened himself and sat up on the bed. And Jacob said to Joseph, he said, "God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan, blessed me and said to me, 'Behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will make you a multitude of people and give this land to your descendants after you as an everlasting possession.'" He said, "Now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh," note this, Jacob puts Ephraim first. He said, "They were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt." He said, "These are mine as Reuben and Simeon. They shall be mine. Your offspring, whom you beget after them, shall be yours. But these are mine." He said, "They will be called by the name of their brothers in the inheritance." Now, you go on, and we'll find as all this unfolds, and we get into Joshua, where they divided the land. Ephraim and Manasseh got an inheritance in the land. Jacob said, he said, "You know, when I telling Joseph, he said, when I came from Padan, Rachel died beside me in the land of Canaan on the way." That was Joseph's mother. He said, "There was just a little distance to go to Ephrath, and I buried her on the way to Ephrath or Bethlehem." When he saw Joseph's sons, I don't know, it just seems like this is going back and forth. He said, "Whose are these?" I think he would have been talking to Joseph, and now he sees Joseph's sons, if I understand this correctly. And Joseph said, "These are my sons whom God's given me in this place." And he said, "Now bring them to me and I'll bless them." What's a blessing? Somebody help me. What's a blessing? Saying words over somebody, and saying good words over them. Now, so that's what he's getting ready to do. So Joseph brings them to Jacob, and Jacob took his, when they stood before him, Ephraim with his right hand toward Israel's left is the way Joseph placed them. Joseph wanted to make sure that Manasseh the eldest had the right hand laid on it. You know, he wanted this thing done properly. And then he said he put on his left hand on Manasseh's head, or pardon me, let me go back and read this. Jacob puts his right hand on Ephraim's head and his left hand on Manasseh's head, guiding his hands, knowing what he was doing, even though Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed him, and he started saying, he said, "God before," and I'm in verse 15, "God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. Let my name be named upon them in the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth." Now Joseph looks and he says, "Whoa," he says, "Daddy's got his hands crossed on these boys." And so he took his father's hands to remove them, you know, to put the right hand on Manasseh. And Joseph told him, he said, "Not like this, father." He said, "You know, this is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head." And Jacob refused. He said, "I know." He said, "He'll become a people. He'll be great. But his younger brother shall be greater. And his descendants shall become a multitude of nations." I ask you, which was a bigger tribe, Ephraim or Manasseh? Ephraim was a much bigger tribe than Manasseh. So Jacob blessed them. And when he blessed them, he said, "May God make you as Ephraim and as Manasseh." He put the younger first, didn't he? And then he tells him, he said, "Look, Joseph," he said, "I'm dying. But God will be with you, and he'll bring you back to the land of your fathers." He says, "I've given you one portion more than your other brothers." He said, "I took it from the hand of the Amorite with my sword and my bow. You know, you've been treated rough, but I'm going to repay you with a double portion. Now, you understand the double portion is the birthright, isn't it? That goes to the eldest son. Isn't that interesting? And yet, when you look at when he blesses them, he actually curses the eldest son. It's not a blessing he speaks over Reuben. But he gives Joseph the double portion. That's the birthright. So when you go into chapter 49, he gets all his sons together and he says, "Now I'm going to tell you what's going to happen to you in the last days." He said, "Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might in the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power." Now listen to this. "Unstable as water, you shall not excel because you went up to your father's bed. Then you defiled it. He went up to my couch." You remember Reuben went up to Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, which was Jacob's concubine, and lay with her. And now this is what Jacob's referring to here. He said, "Simeon and Levi are brothers. Instruments of cruelty are in their dwelling." These are the two blood brothers of Dinah. Shechem and all these guys in Shechem to get circumcised. And then on the third day, Levi and Simeon just went boldly in the city and killed all the males, full of the city, and took the spoil. That's why he says they're instruments of cruelty. And he said, "Let not my soul enter their council. Let not my honor be united to their assembly. For in their anger they slew a man in their own self-will, the hamstrung an ox. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel." Now look at this. "I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Judah, you are he whom your brother shall praise. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He bows down, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who shall rouse him? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people. Binding his donkey to the vine and his donkey's colt to the choice vine, he washed his garments in wine and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are darker than wine, and his teeth whiter than milk." Now, I promise you, that's the blessing. And I'm telling you, he's referring to Jesus Christ, the Messiah, that's coming through Judah. Now, isn't it interesting? This is a woman we just read about that you know, is going to go hang out with a prostitute, actually commits incest in the process of this. And this is who the Messiah comes through. Interesting, isn't it? "Zebulun," he said, "you'll dwell by the haven of the sea. He shall become a haven for ships, and his border shall adjoin Sidon. Issachar, a strong donkey, lying down between two burdens. He saw that rest was good, and the land was pleasant, and he bowed his shoulder to bear a burden, and he became a band of slaves." Now think about that one. He said, "Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel." We know that happened. "Dan shall be a serpent by the way, a viper by the path, that bites the horse's heels, so that its rider shall fall backward. I have waited for your salvation, O Lord. Gad, a troop, shall triumph upon him, but he shall triumph at last. Bread from Asher shall be rich, and he shall yield royal dainties. Naphtali is a deer let loose. He uses beautiful words. Joseph is a fruitful bough by a well. His branches run over the wall. The archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him and hated him, but his bow remained in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. For there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. By the God of your father who will help you, and by the Almighty who will bless you with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies beneath, blessings of the breast and of the womb." You understand the Messiah didn't come through Joseph, though. He came through Judah. He said, "The blessings of your father have excelled the blessings of my ancestors, up to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills, they shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him who was separate from his brothers. When they divided the land, remember, Joseph got the double portion. Manasseh, Ephraim. Benjamin, he said, a ravenous wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. Now, Benjamin's an interesting tribe. If you go in and you study, Benjamin was a tribe that had tremendous warriors. They had the elite in the army that could shoot with their left hand or their right, throw a rock, a sling, or a bow. Okay. And you'll find that these guys were warriors, and they weren't always operating with integrity. These are the ones in Gibeah that the homosexuals and all this, and I won't get ahead of myself too much here, but you know, they're wanting to commit a homosexual act with this guy, and he sticks his concubine out, and anyway, they abuse her all night, and then she dies from the sexual abuse, and the guy goes home and cuts her in 12 pieces, sends her to all the tribe, and Benjamin, the tribe of Benjamin, was almost wiped out. But the whole nation of Israel went up against Benjamin, and it was the third time that they defeated, because the first two times the tribe of Benjamin defeated them. Tremendous warriors. Ravenous wolves. Now, these are the 12 tribes of Israel. He told them, he said, now I'm going to die, is the essence of it. Bury me with my fathers in the cave in the field of Ephraim the Hittite, the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan. He said, Abraham bought this field. And he said, they buried Abraham and Sarah there. They buried Isaac and Rebekah. Now look at this. And there I buried Leah. He wasn't buried with Rachel. He didn't request to be buried with Rachel. Isn't that interesting? Leah was a tender-eyed one, remember? But isn't it interesting that in the end, she got her desire? He said the field and the cave that is there were purchased from the sons of Heth. Now he says he drew his feet into the bed, breathed his last. He died, in other words. And then Joseph wept over his father, and then he commanded the physicians to embalm him. You know, Egyptians were big on embalming, so he was embalmed. It took 40 days. 40 days were required for him, for such are the days required for those who are embalmed. And the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. Isn't that interesting? He wasn't even an Egyptian. Wasn't an Egyptian yet. Yet they're mourning for him. And then when those days were passed, it says that Joseph went to Pharaoh and he said, look, if I found favor in your sight, he said, let me fulfill my vow to my father. He asked to be buried at a particular place. I'm just asking permission to take him back into this land and bury him there. And Pharaoh said, go up. Go ahead and do what your father had you to swear to. And so Joseph went up and took his servants with him, and it says, elders of the house, elders of the land of Egypt. In other words, man, this is the dignitaries, you understand, that's going up for this funeral. And it says, so they go up, the chariot, the horsemen, a very great gathering. Verse 10 says, they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond the Jordan, and they mourned with a great and very solemn lamentation. And he observed 7 days of mourning for his father. And when these inhabitants of the land saw the mourning that was going on there, they said, this is a deep mourning of the Egyptians. So they called the name of the place Abel Mizraim, which is beyond the Jordan, which translated means mourning of Egypt. So Jacob's sons did for him just as he asked. And then they carried him to the land of Canaan. They buried him in the field, in the cave, in the field of Machpelah. And so they had honored his request. And then when they returned, Joseph's brothers are real concerned now that their father's dead. They said, you know, now that daddy's dead, Joseph may want to get even with us. He may hate us now and actually repay us for all the evil we did to him. So they sent messengers to him. And they said, before your father died, He commanded. And he said, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you. Now, please forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of your father. What did Joseph do? When he read this, he wept. Or when he heard this, he wept. And he told them, he said he went down, he fell down before his brothers again, fall down before his face, and they say, behold, we're your servants. Joseph told him, he said, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? In other words, guys, God made this decision, not you. He said, as for you, you meant evil against me. But God meant it for good in order to bring it about, as it is this day, to save many people alive. Keeping his perspective, isn't it? He said, now don't be afraid. I will provide for you and also for your little ones. It says he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. So Joseph dwelt in Egypt and he lived to be 110 years old. It says he saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. And the children of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were also brought up on Joseph's knees. And Joseph told him, he said, now he told his brethren, he said, now I'm dying. God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land. And this interests me. God brought them into the land. Joseph requested, he was an instrument to get them into the land. And now right here at his death, he said, now God's going to take you out of the land. He'll move you out of the land. And he said, just like he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, he said, now I want you to take an oath here. He said, God will visit you. Now you carry my bones up from here. In other words, obviously when I die, they're going to bury me in Egypt, but when you make your exodus out of Egypt, take my bones with you. So Joseph died. He was 110 years old. They embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. Now, do you know what happened when the nation of Israel, when the children of Israel made their exodus out of Egypt? They carried his bones. In other words, they picked up that coffin and took it with them. And when Joshua divided the land and they got their inheritance, Joseph was buried in the land of his inheritance in the promised land. Isn't that something? Well, now that's just an overview of the book of Genesis. I trust you've gotten something out of that. There's so much in there, and obviously we don't know it all, and we just try to give you the highlights of things that really struck us and things that God has shown us. And I trust that this has helped you. And then the next session, we will... Actually, I think we'll probably begin on Exodus and then take the last session and let you review so it'll be fresh on your mind. And we'll review the questions for the test on Genesis. And don't panic. We're not trying to overwhelm you with tests. We're going to make it real easy. We want you to remember things. Your test will be things we want you to remember. So it won't be trick stuff and all that. Is any question concerning?